Good afternoon. Welcome to Who's Tom and Dick? With your hosts, Martin Weavers and Patrick Mortimer.
Hello, Martin. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Patrick. Yeah, I'm doing really, really good, and I'm a little bit excited again today.
Oh, yeah. You're always getting excited these days.
Well, we've got someone in the studio with us, haven't we?
Oh, yes.
So yep. I always like someone in the studio because that saves me listening to you.
Well, I could say the same, I suppose.
I know.
But anyway, let's crack on today because we've got a special guest, haven't we?
We have. Just before we do, we've got my cousin Karen in. And we're going to be talking about multiple sclerosis because, unfortunately, my lovely darling cousin suffers from that. So, which I'll explain to everybody. It's a disease that affects the central nervous system, and no two people are affected with the same symptoms. And the symptoms you get, I mean, I'm sure Karen will nod to some of these: double vision, numbness. But she's going to tell us all later all about this, and tingling and paralysis, vertigo, tremors, muscle spasticity, and painful muscle contractions, slurred speech, fatigue, depression. So Karen would get that all. There is no known treatment for it at the moment, unfortunately, but there is medication around. So I'm going to just ask you to tell us all about your life story. Karen, you tell your life story, darling.
It started back in 1991, was when I first had the testing. The symptoms started back in 82. I went to the doctors with the tingling. I probably had everything all together. I was the manager at Dorothy Perkins, and I was in the office and I was looking out the window, and suddenly I lost my eyesight. I knew what was out the window, but I couldn't see it. One eye came back, and then I passed out, and somebody found me. They came in. What's wrong? I said nothing. I just fainted. So I was taken to hospital. From there, it all started. They diagnosed optic neuritis.
Oh, right.
Which I had never heard of. And thought, well, it was a bit strange. I'm not ill. I don't feel ill. Am I going blind? So they said to me, have you got a consultant? No, what's one of them? And what do they do? So she said, oh, I think you need to go to your doctor and we'll start from the beginning. And the beginning started with the consultant, who I eventually got to see some year later. Who then put me through some tests, which were an MRI, and nothing else was done. It was very lackadaisical, a very, this isn't important. It wasn't important to them. It was important to me. The exact same happened 18 months later. I lost my eyesight again. I was a little bit more aware of what we needed to do. Went to the doctor, went to the hospital, got all the medication, which in those days it was steroids, 3 weeks of steroids. Lay flat on your back, don't move, which is actually very hard to do.
Oh, God, yeah.
And my doctor was getting a little bit more concerned. So he was actually in contact with the consultant. I lived in Ipswich at this time. They had a very unorthodox way of dealing with it, very hands-off approach. Try this, try that, try this. And that was over the phone 30-odd years ago.
Had you always been at the Ipswich one with this, or had you been at...
No, I started in Ipswich with
this. Okay, yeah.
I did as I was told, and which is unusual for me. Everything went back to normal and never knew I was ill. Eventually, the MRI scans came back and I had an appointment with the doctor in the January. That got cancelled. We didn't have any of the NHS problems we have now. Rebooked again for March. And then March, he wanted to take a holiday. So it got cancelled. And then it was reset for July.
Wow.
So I thought, well, there's nothing wrong. In such a long time. So I drove up in July. It was at Hospital. I can remember to this day exactly where I parked.
You drove yourself?
I went on my own because I thought, there's nothing wrong. They've cancelled it. They're just going to tell me to take more of something.
Yeah.
So I went in, sat down, waited for him in his office. He turned up. And before he came through the door with my file in his hand, and before he even sat down, he said, there's no easy way to tell you this. You've got MS. Do you know what that is? And I was like, oh, whoa. Yes, I do know what it is. And I've got MS. Oh, my God, I've got a career. I love my job. I'm married to my job.
And you're very good at it.
And I'm going to end up in a wheelchair. Can I do my job in a wheelchair? And everything else was blah, 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 blah. I heard nothing. He got up and left. So I got up and left. I can remember where I parked. And I can't remember from the hospital to my house getting home. Don't remember the journey. It's just I was in the hospital, then I was at home. I rang my then husband, tried to explain. And so he said, all right, I'm coming home. But I couldn't tell him anything because I hadn't. All I'd heard was the MS.
Yeah.
And then it was down to me to do all the research, because.
But how did you do your research? Was it on not on Google?
No,
Google wasn't around then.
It wasn't. No, it was. I don't. To be honest, to find out the information then was very difficult.
Yeah.
So you had to phone back the hospital for them to send you information, that, and all they did was collect up lots of pamphlets.
Yeah.
And every pamphlet was alarming.
Right.
It didn't tell you what was going to happen. It told you when it happened, this is what you've got. Well, I knew I'd got MS. I had no idea how the journey was going to take me. And I just went into denial. I had 5 years of denial where I told nobody. Absolutely nobody, apart from my mum and dad. And then I swore them to secrecy.
So there were no physical symptoms at that stage?
So I didn't tell anybody. My sister, she knew 5 years later and was horrified.
Wow.
That I hadn't told her. It's about the same time I told you, I think.
Yeah.
In those 5 years, did you feel that you were deteriorating in any way?
No, I just, you know, sometimes I felt numb in my fingers.
Yeah.
I thought, just because I'm thinking about it, don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd immerse myself in work and it all go away. And they call it the denial stage, and it can last 5-10 years.
So what you were shown at the time are all classic symptoms of how people are.
I lived in Ipswich for 7 years, and the hospital was of no use. The consultant was, I'll see you in a year's time. Okay, I've got questions now. I was only 26.
Right, yeah.
So you're naive. You don't really know a lot about the world. And I just thought, oh, well, I'm happy in my little world, so I'll carry on, which is what I did. And in hindsight, if I could talk to my 26-year-old now, I would say, you should be doing this, this and this, which would benefit you at 57. However, hindsight's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So I then moved to Chelmsford with work, or because of the house, I moved house and travelling. Sometimes I thought travelling was different. I was get tired quicker. But again, was that all in the head? So you carry on trying to be normal. One of the realisations of it was I was in Chelmsford and I took my niece and nephew ice skating. What possessed me? I have no idea. I've never been any good on 2 feet, let alone with skates. Now I put, you know, these iced shoes on. And they were horrified at, oh my God, she's going to make a fool of us. Yes, I did that. I did that really well. And I kept falling over. But then I thought about it. I thought, oh, you know, that's nothing. That's not. But when I look back, I used to do aerobics. When everybody went left, I went right. And when everybody went right, I was going left. Mm-hmm. And they was all these sort of little
signs.
Yeah. And they all add up to, you'd think it's clumsy, but it's not. It's all to do with the front lobar section and your left and mm-hmm. your right brain. So, so I then went to Chelmsford and I had a new consultant who was very thorough. He did a lot of work in London, decided that he was going to do another MRI, check my MRI. I then learned that I had lesions on my brain.
Oh.
I had no idea what lesions were.
No.
So apparently it's where the, like an electrical storm in your brain, and if it's quite bad, it leaves a scar.
Right.
And how much scarring you'd got in your brain determined as to the severity.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently in Ipswich, I only had one scarring. By the time I got to Chelmsford, I only had one and a half.
Right.
Which I was like, well, at least it's not two.
Yeah.
Then I was put with an MS nurse, which was brilliant. You could phone them and say, what's this?
Or, I was going to ask you that because at the other places, no, you just left on your
yeah,
own.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say, wasn't you even given a nurse?
No.
But, at least she was given a nurse at...
In Chelmsford.
Yeah.
Then she was very good. She was very thorough and she would explain everything, which I wasn't used to because of Ipswich. So you have to, it takes time to get used to somebody's methodology
mm-hmm.
Because everybody works differently.
Yeah.
And I felt I was getting more confused with simple things.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that's part of it, which I didn't know. And then I thought, no, that's not right, that's not right. Carry on. So I carried on and went sort of, semi went back into denial.
Yeah.
The more information I got, the more I didn't want to have. I was only there for 4 years in Chelmsford. And then I moved to Colchester.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could start the process all over again. While I was in Chelmsford, they did start suggesting a drug, which was beta interferon, which was something to help the MS. It wasn't going to take it away, but it was there to work on different blood cells, and they put something into your body. And I dread to think what I was putting into my body because they don't really tell you enough. they didn't tell me, for instance, you should only be on it for a maximum of 3 years.
Yeah.
I found that out later when I'd been on it 5.
Mm. Right.
So what else had I been putting into my body?
Yeah.
So that was back. I went from Colchester to here, at Sudbury.
But so this is the fourth hospital you've been under now, yeah?
And I've had 5 consultants.
Yeah.
Right.
In 30 years.
And has it been getting better, the consultancy, would you say?
Yes.
Yeah.
Today we are much better. The NHS is a fantastic corporate company, if you like. They have so much on their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And they now have better departmentalising.
Mm, right.
So you've got your oncology, you've got your neurology, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. They've got much better at it.
Mm.
And you don't feel as much of a nuisance as you did back in
The year it all started.
Yeah, the year it all started. I had the opportunity to read my medical notes.
Ah. Is that because you're under the Bury Hospital, or are you actually under the Sudbury?
No, I'm under Bury.
Yeah, because that's my hospital, obviously. Right. And I think they're brilliant.
Yeah, they are.
Mm.
But I got to read my medical notes, went into my doctor's, and said about it, and they shut me in the room, mm-hmm. in a room with my medical records, and I was able to go back. And I went back, and the first time a doctor mentioned MS was in 1982.
Which was how long after your first visit?
No, I hadn't even been there for the MS.
Oh, right. No.
1982, yeah. And that was in 82, 10 years later, I was diagnosed with MS.
Wow. Right.
So bringing us up to date now, then are the drugs sort of just suppressing the illness?
They did, but I'm not on them now. I was taken off of them in 2005, I think.
Right, so not on anything at all?
No.
Nope. Oh, right.
No.
I was going to say, talk us through a day of all your tablets and that, so...
No, I'm really lucky. I've got down to... probably 3 that are really any good.
I thought you was on more. I don't know why. You know, every time
I was.
I was.
But one of the worst things now is the neuralgia attacks.
Right.
And they are, I can't describe the pain.
Mm.
The neuralgia attacks are severe. Stabbing, it feels like somebody has an ice pick.
Wow.
In your head.
Mm-hmm.
But it is literally...
And how long do they last once they start?
My longest one ever that put me in hospital was a call. It started at 4:30 in the afternoon. I was taken into hospital at 9:00. The 9:00.
Yep, that evening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And morphine was the only thing that would shift it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my longest attack.
Yeah.
But it's intermittent. You know, it's like...
It's good that you can tell people, because people just don't realise what, multiple sclerosis sufferers, do suffer. Because I didn't realise. So I've done a little bit of research before I come to see you, and it's mainly women that are affected. I just thought it'd be 50-50, but it's mainly women.
No, but men do suffer, and they suffer a lot.
Well, we would.
Oh, yes. Of course. When men do get it, they get it a lot quicker, a lot more severe. Mm.
And there are 4 kinds, aren't there?
Yeah. You've got your benign, relapse remitting, which I had. Then secondary progressive, and then progressive.
Yeah.
I'm in secondary progressive stage.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I made a note for that, but thank you, because I'd rather you say it than me. I might get it all wrong.
So yeah. How frequent are the attacks?
Mine tend to be, now I've got them reasonably controlled, they're more sort of 4 to 6 monthly.
All right, okay.
And I'm trying really hard to keep out of West Suffolk.
Yeah.
I did have a couple of bouts towards the end of last year. But we made a pact when I last saw them that I wouldn't come in till at least February, March.
Right.
You must be getting quite tired at the moment, but can we ask you a few more sort of questions?
Yeah,
and all
of course.
That? So did you have to change your diet now? Or did you, have you changed that over the years? Or have you always just thought, I'm going to eat what I want?
No, I chose, in the early days, you think, I'm going to change my diet. It's got to be my diet. And I did all that and didn't make any difference. Then I went through the, sod it, you're only here once.
Yeah.
And then I met Mark in 2000 and we moved here in 2003. And we've tried everything for both of us, different ailments. And we've tried everything. We've now started Monday to Friday, and this has been going on for 3 years, vegetarian Monday to Friday.
Oh, okay.
And then meat Saturday and Sunday. So we have reduced our meat intake. And yes, it's helped the overall torso. And you feel that much better. Right, certainly I do. So I'm quite happy with my diet as we go at the minute.
What would you say your biggest daily struggles are?
Now?
Yeah.
Getting dressed.
Right.
This is the other thing. Over the years, I've gone from being able to shower, dress myself, hair.
Yeah.
Now, I'm left with carers who are absolutely the salt of the earth, as far as I'm concerned. They get me up because I've lost my core strength in my body.
Yeah.
So they have to get me up. I can't do that. And aides that we have around the house to help. Don't get me started. This house has more aides than I don't know where, but they are so vital to lead a normal life. They're out there, but it's again the old adage, if you don't know about it, they're not going to tell you for whatever reason. And, you know, I struggled for a little while and then somebody said, there's an aid for that. Oh, can I get one? Yes. It was delivered within 24 hours.
That's, yeah.
And how much easier has it made my life and the carers? They are, it's quicker for them, which is good. It's better for me because it's making me feel more independent. So shower-wise, I can actually shower myself, but I just can't get to the shower.
Yeah.
Dressing and drying is a little... I can dry my whole right side, but I've lost the use of my right arm and my right leg over the course of the last 10 years. So the aids are out there, but you've got to know about them.
Yeah.
And nobody advises you.
No.
Or it's one of the best kept secrets.
Tell us about when you was in the... Because you had a job with a mobility company, didn't you? And I remember, I thought it was a great article. I hadn't seen you for a while and then suddenly I saw it in the paper and you helped... Well, you went around town, didn't you? And you was trying all the shop doorways and the steps. So tell us a little bit, what was that all about and how did it come about?
When I first came home, I'd taken you back a bit. I had been with this company, New Look, for 10 years.
Other shops are available.
Yes.
I think they've gone bankrupt, haven't they?
Yeah, but, not quite yet.
All right. No, New Look have not gone bankrupt.
They're still out there. But I worked for them for 10 years after leaving Dorothy Perkins. And I grew up, you know, I grew with them. Mm-hmm. And I eventually had to tell them about the MS because I was driving. I wrote off a couple of cars. That was a telltale sign. That was when it got me because I was tired.
Yeah.
I used to get stressed. I can remember going around the M25, literally stop by stop, because I used to have to stop, rest, and then go on to the next one. So it always made life a lot longer. So I was out of the house from 7:30 in the morning till probably 7:30 at night.
So what did New Look say when you told them?
Well, I didn't fit their image in London because I was on crutches.
That is so bad.
Yeah, and I said, well, I ain't going to leave.
Good for you.
And you can't sack me.
Well,
if you do, you know where we're going.
Yeah.
So then I had another car accident, which sort of sealed the fate, really. And they sort of put me on like a gardening leave. I was still being paid. They couldn't sack me, but I wasn't their problem while I wasn't at work.
Right.
And then they...
And you were saving them cars.
Yeah, I was saving them cars. And then they came back to me with... They wanted to put me back to work. And they wanted me to run a shop. They were trying to make it... They weren't going to change my salary, which was good. They were... thought I should just perhaps have a shop and... look after the shop, which was, you know, I didn't want to do that. I wanted my area, but I wanted a smaller area. And they decided that they would put me to an occupational therapist who just looked at me and said, you're still walking, you're still talking, you can still do the job. What's the problem? And I said, well, I don't have one. And he said, right, thank you very much for the... a session, and off I went. So he couldn't sack me.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't do what they wanted to do. So we went back to gardening leave, and I sat at home and they paid me. And then they came, they said, if we come up with money, will you leave? And I said, you've got to make it worth my while. Because at this time I was having to pay for the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And the drugs were £600 a month.
Right.
It's why I was working.
Yeah.
And they came back the first offer. I wouldn't have got out of bed for it. I don't think anybody would. Second, we're like, oh, go away, come back when it's more sensible. And they did. And by that stage, I was fed up. I didn't want to keep this. And it was enough to be... for my needs.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at home by this time because I, at this stage, lost my husband. I didn't fit his image anymore either. And off, which happens in a lot of MS marriages, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand it is very difficult for...
I don't think you should need to apologise for anything like that, Karen.
No, but it's it is very difficult for both parties.
Mm.
And some men can be very helpful. And other men can be like, no, you're not doing what I want you to do.
Yeah.
You know, I found washing and ironing on top of a day's work very difficult.
Yeah. So remember when we was talking about the Free Press and you was going in the mobility shop and doing all the access. So
when I came, access.
Yeah. When I came home, I went to our local, called TGA, which is a company that sells wheelchairs.
It's still there, isn't it?
Mobility, yeah, it's still there.
Yeah, I passed it on the way here.
Yeah. And they sell everything. So they were still quite young at the time and I helped set up their telephone sales. And we did different things. One of the things was with the council to go and find out how the shop, how accessible the shops were in Sudbury.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing because the accessibility back in 2000 are pretty much the same as they are now, although we're getting better. There's still a lot of shops that don't cater for wheelchairs, power chairs. And the thing is, the disability market is so much more buoyant than any other market. We've got more expenditure opportunity that the shops could have if they catered for us. With one, getting into them, and two, getting around them. Some of them you can get into.
I think the problem, a lot of the problems are, and they use this as an excuse sometimes, is that they're old buildings and you can't get the access.
Exactly.
Then the listed building companies get, departments get involved and say, oh, we can't make those changes to a listed building, and they wash their hands with it. Do you feel you've got a positive attitude towards the illness?
I do, yes.
Yeah, it comes across that way, doesn't it?
I've got a can-do attitude, which annoys my other half.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he's like, what were you doing? And I was like, well, I was able to do it 10 years ago. He said, but not now.
On that note, Karen, can I mention something that you did a couple of weeks ago when I videoed you and you didn't want me to look at your face?
Yes.
Karen decided to fall out of a wheelchair.
Really?
What a thing to do.
On a dog walk.
That's right.
Oh, right. Yeah. I wasn't under the influence of alcohol then.
No, I wish it had been. It might not have hurt so much.
I did mean to ask you that before we asked the questions, but I thought, no, go for it.
It was interesting.
But you've been so honest with us, and I hope it's enlightened everybody else, you know, and lots of people who are probably suffering it are probably nodding their heads as you're talking about it, and I think that is really interesting.
Yeah, the more and more I do this podcast, the more and more I learn about these things. You know, I've just heard of MS, and that's as far as it goes with me.
Yeah, no, it's been a fantastic episode.
Thanks for being so honest and a delight to interview.
And thank you for letting us come into your home.
You're welcome.
We didn't get any noises hardly, and we probably got a couple, but that's to be expected on a outdoor interview. So, although we're indoor in the conservatory. But thanks, Karen. Much appreciated, darling.
You're welcome.
Love you.
A big thanks to Karen there. And thanks very much for listening. And we'll be back next week.
Yes.
With another show.
I'll see you next week, Pat.
Take care, Martin.
Yeah, bye, mate.
Thank you very much.
Bye.